This is Radio MD COVID-19 Weekly, your source for COVID-19 news from the front lines of healthcare. I'm Caitlin White. I hope you're salvaging as much of your summer as you can at this point. We'll hear later in this episode from an expert on how domestic abuse has spiked during COVID-19, but first, our news updates. It's been difficult enough to get adults to wear masks, but what about if you have younger kids who might be scared or don't really get what's going on? KidsHealth.org helps us with a few tips this week, saying to use simple words to explain why people are wearing masks and give kids time to look, watch, and get used to what's new. They also say give kids time to practice wearing their mask before they might need to wear one outside of the home. Teach them how to put them on and take them off. They also encourage your kids to decorate their mask and make them together if you can. This might help them feel a sense of ownership and control over the situation. If you're really anywhere in the States right now, you've probably had your AC or your fan running on overdrive lately. But can the AC filter in your home, office, or local mall protect you from COVID-19? Radio MD's Bill Klaproth has more.
So can the AC filter in your home protect you from COVID-19? So what we're talking about here is HEPA filters. HEPA filters are used by hospitals to create sterile rooms for surgeries and to control infectious diseases. Think COVID-19. Unfortunately, to retrofit your home AC unit to accommodate a HEPA filter would be too difficult. So what can you do? There are personal HEPA air purifiers on the market designed to clean a standard room of a home. So if that interests you, you're looking for a machine with a HEPA filter designed for the size of your room, so measure carefully. Having too small of a machine in a large room won't clean the air, while having a large system in a small room is a waste of money. Hope that helps, and here's to better breathing. For Radio MD News, I'm Bill Klaproth.
Bathrooms have always been a germaphobe's nightmare. But how has that changed with COVID-19? A recent study published by Physics of Fluids outlines the potential dangers of toilet plumes, clouds of droplets that can rise 3 feet from a flushing toilet and be inhaled by an unsuspecting user. Aside from the obvious gross factor, simulations found that coronavirus remnants in a person's stool can make their way onto other surfaces or linger in the air nearby. But experts do say the most hazardous part of using a public restroom are the other people in it. Wear a mask, of course, scope out the bathroom ahead of time to see how congested it is, and try to use it when it clears out a bit. Now that states nationwide are reopening, mask wearing has somehow become a controversial topic of debate. Dr. Niketh Sanpal is a New York City-based board-certified internist, gastroenterologist, and faculty member at Touro College of Medicine, and is here to answer some common mask questions. So we got a bunch of questions here, especially now when so many mask things are, you know, who knows what's true and right anymore. So let's start with the basics. What type of mask is better, would you say, cloth or surgical?
So in terms of the way the masks have been developed, it's been scrutinized for an unknown number of reasons. But the most common one is that people are afraid of what type of material. The best type of mask is the one you wear. For the general public, a cloth mask that's 2 to 3 ply, that's covering your nose from the bridge below your chin, is extremely effective. Surgical masks and N95 masks should be safe for all healthcare individuals. Now, the reason why a cloth mask is fine is that the public needs to understand the masks are not to protect you, but by having a widespread mask movement where so many people are wearing it, we are protecting each other. So by you wearing a mask, you're protecting the people around you, and them wearing a mask, they're protecting you. And that's why the cloth masks are just as effective as, let's say, other masks, because it's almost, in a sense, a herd-type protection.
Now, you and I are both in New York State, so we can't go to stores or really outside without masks on. But in the general perspective, how often should people be wearing their masks?
Right. Now, the mask should be worn whenever you are outside your home or in a public setting, or going from one place to another. If you're alone in your car, you don't need to wear a mask. And if you're wearing the mask, it should always be at a time when you are going to have possible exposures. So in New York City, if you're an essential worker or you're somebody who's working in one of the newly released businesses, you should be wearing a mask on the subway. You should be wearing it when you're walking on the street. If you're walking into Starbucks to get a coffee, wear your mask. The masks are a sign of respect. It's become politicized because the current administration refuses to wear it themselves. And unfortunately, when the leadership does not believe in science, it trickles down. And the beautiful thing about science is that it's true whether you believe it or not. Masks do save lives. The current uptick in cases in both Arizona, Florida, and Texas is due to a lack of effective mask sort of reinforcement, as well as opening too early.
It seems like the latest viral thing out of the anti-mask camp is, you know, claiming that masks make people sick or they're dizzy or they're exempt from wearing a mask for breathing problems. Is any of that in any way true?
None of it's true. Masks do not get you sick. You can't get hypoxic from a mask. And the proof in that is there are millions of healthcare workers across the country and somewhere around the world, and we wear them for 8 to 12 hours a day. And none of us have ever gotten hypoxic or sick from wearing the mask, but it has saved our lives. That is why we were vying for and so thankful for all the donations.
So how long do you think we should expect to be wearing these masks, especially, you know, heading to the stores or just places like that?
Well, the fact of the matter is that until there's an effective vaccine, a vaccine that is going to cause antibodies to be developed for a long period of time, that allows for herd immunity, which means at least 80% of the population has immunity to the virus, I think that we're going to be looking at a combination of masks and social distancing and maybe even more stay-at-home orders until that comes around.
Now that we're moving into summer, people are, of course, heading outside. So let's talk about masks while we're outside. Let's say I'm just, you know, hanging out in a backyard with a group of friends. We're staying pretty distant. Where does a mask, is that essential then?
Yeah, it is. The reason why is because you are currently exposed to other people and you're exposing them. We can never be 100% sure that everyone is following the appropriate social distancing and stay-at-home orders. And with reopenings occurring, everyone is being re-exposed to everyone. And so with that being said, if you're going to have a small get-together or medium-sized get-together, you should be wearing masks.
What about exercising if I'm on my bike or going on a run through a park?
So that one's an interesting one because there are two schools of thought. The first is that if you're exercising alone, and let's say you're in New York City and you're running around the aqueduct and it's no one there, then wearing a mask isn't necessarily essential. However, the odds of you not running into somebody is very low. So you should be wearing a mask. At that time, a cloth mask, what I've been recommending to my patients, is to bring a couple of them with you. The reason why is if you're running for an hour, probably within 20 to 30 minutes, your mask is going to get wet. And it's not that it becomes less effective, it's just uncomfortable. You should change the mask midway through your workout.
Absolutely. I've noticed that too on my bike sometimes. So now that it seems like masks are, you know, pretty much going to be around for a while, what are the do's and don'ts of wearing it properly?
Of course. So the most important is wear it. That's the utmost thing that you can do is wear your mask. The most common things that people do that are incorrect is they touch the mask, they play with the mask, they adjust the mask. It's akin to people who wear glasses. It's kind of like a thing they keep touching and readjusting. That's one of the first mistakes. The second, they pull it down below their nose. That's like wearing contraception backwards. There's no point in doing it. So don't below your nose. Don't let it below your mouth. Wearing it around your chin is like wearing a piece of jewelry. It's just an accessory and it has no effect whatsoever. So making sure that it stays from bridge to below the chin is important. I know that the nose piece can sometimes cause fogging of the glasses, and so people get upset with that. There are special wipes that you can use for that. You can also use a little bit of double-sided tape if you're going to be wearing it for a long period of time. And then the other mistake people make is it hurts them behind the ears. You can actually just take a small paper clip and pull the strings back and clip it to the back of your head with the paper clip, and it pulls the strings off of your ears. It's very effective and a tool that nurses and physicians have been doing for decades. Those are some of the mistakes people make, but the number one, of course, is simply just not wearing it.
So it's really unfortunate how politicized this has been, but is there any last, you know, statements, concerns for anyone listening who maybe isn't convinced wearing a mask? What can we do to maybe get people to wear them more?
It's a symbol of altruism and respect and collective love for each other. Our species is under attack. It's not that we as Americans are, or we as Republicans are, or we as Democrats are. Our species is under attack by an organism that has no face, no soul, and no intellect. It's just doing what it does because that's its purpose. But our purpose is greater, and our purpose is to protect one another. And if we can at least understand that there is no downside to wearing the mask, we would see a great deal more drops in cases, the curve would begin to reflatten, and we wouldn't see the horrendous number of patients getting admitted to the hospitals in cities like Houston and in Florida.
Great. Well, Dr. Sun Paul, thank you so much for your time and for this info. Super, super important. Violence seems to be everywhere right now, and it's not only the protests against racism and police brutality. Domestic abuse spiked during COVID-19, and it is far from over. Although our country has started the reopening process, the pandemic and its economic fallout have made it harder for those who experience domestic violence to escape their abuser. Manette Morgan is a violence and domestic abuse expert and is here to share how survivors can get the help they need. And Manette, tell us about how all of this turbulence in the country right now is affecting the growing rates of domestic violence we're seeing.
Well, I personally feel that a lot of what we're seeing is the cause and effects of fear. You know, with everything going on and people being, you know, for so long trapped in their homes, some still are, some are out. But I think fear of the what ifs triggers so much for individuals. People don't like knowing what's, you know, don't like to worry about what's next, what's coming. So I'm always talking about, you know, to me, the what ifs are, what if I get sick? What if I even unfortunately die? You know, what if I can't pay my bills? What if things never get better or don't go back to some kind of normal that I'm familiar with? And this is, you know, my theory on what's going on, you know, because the fears present more anger, rage, anxiety, hopelessness, depression, all those things. And when you're dealing with people that are abusive, they like to be in control. Let's face it. And when you have all of this going on, they don't feel like they're in control anymore and they're scared. And I think that's why we're seeing such a rise in abuse and even violent abuse, is because these same people don't have that control. So what do? They try to control the people that's in their household, their family, their children, their partners. And to me, I think that's exactly what we're seeing today with everything going on.
Now, of course, COVID has been the main issue, you know, for the last 3 months. But now I'd say in the last maybe month or a couple of weeks, we're seeing all the protests and the political unrest. Do you think that's contributing at all?
I do. I think it is, because I think everyone, it's the same thing, the fear base, and we're pent up. It's almost like being, for lack of a better word, a caged animal or something. And now, because we're just so edgy and at unease, that's why I think we're seeing more protest, more things, and the rise in the abuse. You know, I think it's all related. You know, what's going on with the protest is very valid. So don't misunderstand me there. I'm a big supporter, but in what their cause is. But I don't think if we'd been pent up so long that it would be to this extreme, let's say, right now. So those are just kind of my thoughts on that one.
Now, aside from all of that, I mean, you mentioned that money with COVID and people losing jobs and just the economy, that's playing a role into these numbers. Tell us about how that kind of plays into what we're seeing.
I think it's really just, yeah, just, you know, that stress of, like I said, the what ifs. You know, when you've got to think, abuse goes across every economical situation in our society. It's not isolated by any means. But there are some people, and there's some statistics out there, I don't have them in front of me, that talk about a lot more middle, lower middle class people. They're dealing with much more stressful situations. They're the ones that, for lack of a better word, are the worker people, worker bees out there that are, you know, having service jobs and, you know, just out there among everyone where it is much more scary than someone that might be able to work at their home in their computer or, you know, telecommute or something. So I think, and too, they're the ones that have lost the most jobs. Let's be honest. They're the ones that are, you know, lost the most in this terrible time. Yeah. So, you know, what you're seeing is just that increase of frustration, and they don't, you know, they don't know what they can do. They're at a loss of well, what am I going to do? How am I going to pay my bills? Just like we're talking about. So that frustration, unfortunately, can, you know, they'll lash out at the loved ones around them in a lot of cases. So more than ever, I feel that victims are feeling more isolated than ever, more trapped than ever. Used to, at least that person went to work and they had some peace. Right. Yeah, exactly. Or went out with their friends or things like that. And I think alcohol abuse, drug abuse are going up. Statistics are showing that as well. And so, unfortunately, this is the result.
Now, it's so difficult to boil this down to a simple question, but for any possible survivors who may be listening, how can they seek out help, especially with social distancing and all of these other, you know, new rules kind of in place at this time?
Well, I think there's still a lot of help out there. You know, first and foremost, let me say, if you are in a life-threatening situation, please call 911. First and foremost, that applies to any life-threatening situation. So if you're in that situation, please do. Now, I realize there's people out there right now that are even questioning that. I get it. Maybe, you know, they're just scared, okay? But for those in that situation, and even the ones that aren't in a life-threatening situation, it's just gotten unbearable. Maybe it's just gotten so tense in your home and your relationships that you just can't stand it anymore. I think there's some great organizations out there. You know, there's the National Domestic Violence Hotline. There's Love is Respect, womenslaw.org, which actually has state-by-state information. RAIN.org is another great organization out there. And I just encourage people to reach out to these. Now, just so you know, you can go to my website at MannetteMorgan.com, which is M-A-N-N-E-T-T-E, Morgan, M-O-R-G-A-N. And I list these organizations, tons of resources and organizations for people to reach out to. And for those that are in situations, let's say that their perpetrator is monitoring them, I always say, you know, be really careful. You know, you might want to take up, I'm in the process of working up a form for people to look at to kind of get some ideas of how to protect themselves, you know, from search engines like DuckDuckGo or whatever it is. That's a great search engine, and it doesn't track. You know, if you do get on and do some research and you're looking for organizations, erase your history. There's little tricks and things that I think a lot of survivors aren't aware of if they're in that really intense situation where someone's constantly monitoring them. So I encourage them to be safe and careful. And, you know, those are just some things that they need to think about. There's also other support systems. I mean, some communities have great support systems that you can just look up in your own community. Friends and family that are supportive to you. You know, I'm totally aware that, you know, some abusers, they isolate the victim from their friends and family, or even turn the friend and family and make them think that they're the one that, you know, having to take control because, you know, the victim just doesn't know what they're doing. I mean, it's just so messed up. But there's always some friends or family out there. And I always highly suggest, too, if you're in one of those monitoring situations, maybe use their computers, their phones, to look and do your research sometimes.
Great. Manette, is there anything we didn't touch on that you want listeners to know?
Yeah, I think the other thing is I always say there's three components to getting your life back on track after this or trying to get out of these situations. I always say there's get help, get out, and stop the cycle. And what that entails is first, just make a plan. Research your options. Reach out to these organizations. Maybe you need a support group, therapist, lawyer, resources, a safe place to go or stay. You know, that's the getting help part and making the plan. Second, get out. Make your move. You know, I know firsthand I am a survivor of emotional, sexual, and physical abuse. I get it. It's the hardest thing I ever did was to leave. And I think for people who've never been through it, they just think, just leave, go. And that's not always the easiest thing for the victim. So get out. You can do this is what I always say. I did it. You can do it. And you, if you learn one thing from this conversation or hearing this, you deserve more than the abuse you've experienced is what I always say. So take your life back, get out there and do something different. Then finally, it's all about stopping the cycle of abuse. And I am a firm believer that it's important to make an investment in yourself and educate yourself. Learn what you can about abuse. Maybe you need a therapist, group therapy, guidance, a self-help book, or something like my book, Finding Your Voice, which is all about the healing process and everything we've talked about. The best gift you can give yourself is to heal the pain of your past and discover your self-worth. Because when you regain your self-worth, you will become self-empowered, is my belief. And that's the key to breaking the cycle of abuse in our society. Because every survivor out there that becomes self-empowered, they will not accept abuse in their life going forward. I think that's why we always see so many survivors get out of a relationship and get in another abusive relationship. It's because they never do the work. They never figure out who they are and find their own self-value, their self-worth, and become empowered so that they don't let it happen again in their lives and the lives of their children. So I'm a huge believer in put your life back together, regain that empowerment, and break that cycle.
Find out more about Manette's work at ManetteMorgan.com. This has been Radio MD COVID-19 Weekly. Shoot us an email with how you're spending your pandemic summer at COVID19@RadioMD.com. That's COVID19@RadioMD.com. I'm Caitlin White. Stay safe and 6 feet apart.